It's About Hope is the title of the Reverend John Carrier's talk today. He and his family, his wife Beth, and daughters Jessica and Alex, live in Winona. John is a former Lutheran pastor, scenic carpentry and angling teacher, park ranger, refugee and asylum activist, and author. He bakes bread, kayaks, reads, brews beer, and sings and plays jazz. Whew. He reports he is still trying to figure out retirement. Now, if you can't connect to any of his varied interests, you're free to excuse yourself. John Carrier, welcome to UU.
Thanks. Lots of friends here. Wow, I can't believe how many people I know and how few young people I know. Alex and Jessica do not live here in Winona. Alex lives in South Dakota and Jessica lives in Madison. Beth and I are still here, 33 years now. It's good to see you all. At St. Paul Episcopal Church, I forgot. I'm supposed to electrify here. How's that? Good. At St. Paul Episcopal Church, there's a sacred place about the size of this room. It's now open only between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m., and we're only serving one meal a day instead of three. Well, you can get breakfast, maybe. It's where anyone can go for a safe, warm, dry place for food and board games, peace, support, and welcome. It's called the Winona Day Center. Directly beneath your feet is another sacred place made holy by giving a place to sleep each night of the cold months, November 1st through March 31st. Right beneath your feet, it's just a hall with cots and clean bedding, pillows, and a toilet down the hall. But on any given night, for about 20 people, it's a place of welcome, support, warmth, just a little hope in the face of death, despair. Life facing death squarely in the face. A little light warding off a lot of darkness. Yesterday, I was just polishing up my sermon for you here. I'm sorry, it's not a sermon, it's a talk. Yesterday, I was just polishing up this talk for you when I got an email from a friend and colleague in the Winona Sheltering Network. Several of you know about this, apparently. One of our regular guests at the day warming shelter and downstairs in the overnight shelter died in the night of April 1st. We had just shut down and moved everything out. We'd just shut down and cleared out that very morning, and Brentley was discharged from the hospital with pneumonia into the rain. And that's where he died. Found dead on the morning of April 2nd. He was an every night guest. He slept here in the basement beneath your feet, in a warm bed on March 31st, but there was no such place on April 1st. Easter is about hope in the face of despair. Light in the darkness, new life confronting death. You've heard before the aphorism that into each life rain must fall. Easter weekend is a torrential downpour. It's a deadly Noah-type flood. Followed by sunlight.
Thank you.
The promise of a new life somehow. That it might not be an illusion, but real hope. Death can come very quickly, or it can slowly press in and squeeze the life out of you. Jesus, on the other hand, died on Friday, took the day off, and got up the next day. Before the weekend was out. The resurrection takes a lot longer these days. The talk I had originally prepared for you was way too autobiographical. I'll just give you a flat-out statement. Our lives, and I'm guessing your life, is about loss and death and then somehow recovering and discovering new life and moving on. An often repeated phrase is, that which does not kill us makes us strong. Really. Though it was written by the famous theologian Friedrich Nietzsche in 1888, is probably much older than that. But in my humble opinion, it is only an aphorism. An easy answer to a difficult question. A pat on the back. Aw, come on, cheer up, it ain't that bad. Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. Making light of something really heavy. It's a bumper sticker solution. When that which does not kill you makes you strong, leaves you in a crumpled heap. It's well intended, but it's misplaced optimism. When what is needed is an end to death. The real hope that life after death is possible. Excuse me a second. So now the autobiographical part, and some of you have been part of this. I'm looking at M. Falk for one in particular. The first World AIDS Day observance in Winona was organized by the Lutheran Campus Center, where I used to work. We hung red ribbons on trees all over campus. We hung clever and funny condom posters in bathrooms all over campus, St. Mary's and here, where we hoped they would be stolen and put in dormitory rooms where they belonged. We brought a portion of the AIDS names quilt here to Winona State and to St. Mary's University. We jointly did that with their campus ministry. We went to Washington, D.C. and volunteered to help with the final display of the entire names quilt. You wouldn't believe how huge that thing is. I don't know, anybody seen it? It filled the entire National Mall and both sidebars where the trees are. The entire mall covered with the AIDS names quilt. And for those of you who don't know, the names quilt is a series of 400 square foot quilts that are made up of 2x4 quilts, making a memorial to someone who had died of HIV/AIDS. The quilt required active hope on the parts of millions. Hope that sought to support people who were affected and infected with HIV. Each quilt witnessed against the despairing vision that a diagnosis of AIDS was a death sentence. It made something incredibly beautiful and saying no to death, even as it remembered those who had died. That is an Easter vision. The Lutheran Campus Center, or the LCC, as it was known, hosted and founded the Community Eating Disorders Awareness Coalition, confronting death head-on and offering hope for new life. We welcomed the Calendar Girls Project. How many of you know what the Calendar Girls Project was? All right, the Calendar Girls Project, a fundraising project to raise awareness to fighting breast cancer, and that was far too controversial for any other congregation but ours. We hosted Matthew Shepard's mother and got her to come and speak at Winona State. She was a voice of hope even in the face of her son's murder. The Lutheran Campus Center was the first business in town to proudly display rainbow banners and declare that everyone had the right to live and love and be loved. We held interfaith dialogues. Muslims, Jews, and Christians came together to find common ground, and we studied Jeff Broad's textbook on comparative religions. And if that isn't an exercise in hope to actually read something that wasn't assigned during the school year, on 9/11, the Muslim students came to the Lutheran Campus Center to express their sorrow and their shame, because they had no place else to go. Looking back, nearly everything we did was about death and new life. Sorrow and hope, cycles and circles. Some of what we did was pretty religious and followed the church calendar. Like just before Thanksgiving, we'd go to a tree farm and sing Christmas carols in the back of a hay wagon being dragged around. And then we would cut our tree and bring it back and decorate it. And before Christmas, way before Christmas, because Christmas break, we would celebrate Christmas. And then on January 6th, when everybody was back, January 6th is, by the way, Epiphany. It is not just the day that fanatical fascists stormed the castle. January 6th, light coming into the darkness, Epiphany. In some traditions, the Eastern Orthodox, for instance, it's Christmas. In others, Three Kings Day or Tres Reyes. We also would then, that night, take the tree down, which is always kind of sad. And we'd have a bonfire. And from that charred remains of that Christmas tree, we would make the cross that we would use throughout Lent as our centerpiece of knowing. And we'd make ashes from the previous year's palms to make ashes for Ash Wednesday. On Good Friday, for the handful of students and faculty who were still in town, we would remember the death that Holy Week presents to us. And then on Easter itself, have a sunrise service up on Garvin Heights. And there, our greatest hope was that it wouldn't snow. Cycles of life and death, death and new life. Exercises and hope. A rhythm we played on piano and drum and flutes and bass and brass handbells and violin and even a didgeridoo. I had a false hope that I could learn to play the bass guitar. All things are possible, it has been said, but some hopes are just weather balloons. Something goes up, takes a measurement, comes right back down. My bass guitar was a weather balloon. In a typical year, our weekly life and death rehearsals at the LCC, we used all the trappings, incense and candles and ashes and water and flour and flowers, and bread and wine. Bread and wine, when you think about it, can only be made with the rhythm of death and life. One of our favorite ditties was a tiny little hymn, "As the grains of wheat, once scattered on the hill, were gathered into one to become our bread, so may all your people from all the ends of earth be gathered into one in you." Wheat and grapes grow and are harvested and then crushed and then fermented. Takes more than 3 days. Death becomes new life in bread and wine. I'm a big fan of bread and wine. Sometimes more one than the other. But they are better than grains of wheat and raisins. These days, ever since COVID, actually, these days, every Sunday at noon, we go online and we have brunch with Jessica and Alex, wherever they may be. And we have bread and wine and really good cheese. Ironically, the one Sunday that we don't do that is Easter, because they come home. And though we may have bread and wine, if I can get home and make bread in time, probably not, this one Sunday, then we skip bread and wine and cheese, and we make lamb. And Jessica and Alex have made incredible deviled eggs. Like you've never, ask her for the recipe, but she'll probably leave faster than that. Incredible deviled eggs. Death and life. Some things need to die, like injustice and ignorance and violence and hatred, apathy. These never seem to stay properly dead. Easter isn't about not letting death, though, have the last word. It's about new life, love, not hate. It's about hope, not despair. Among the medieval lists of the seven deadly sins is despair, and I think that in itself is a despairing model. Despair isn't something you do. It isn't something you decide, oh, I think I'll despair today. It comes as an unbidden, unwelcome guest, and sometimes stays way too long. It's death. Just a little excursus here. I'm never known to do that. The Lutheran Campus Center has a new pastor, and you've met her, Karina Lott. If I hadn't left, she'd never be here. And so it was good that I left. She's one of the best pastors, maybe the best pastor I've ever met. As many of you know, maybe all of you know, Lutheran Campus Center burnt down last year, a year and a half ago, and now they've started to rebuild, and it's not too late to give. Just saying. that could use the help. A new Lutheran campus center will be built. It's rising from its ashes. Happy Easter, by the way. Is it all better now? Is death gone forever from our doors?
Nope.
Plenty of bad in our times. Lots of death. As Stan Pollock told me shortly before he died, if you don't think of death at least once a day, you're not paying attention. But at Easter, there is also a reminder. We have hope. Some people say that Easter is the end of the reign of death. Lots of Bible verses tell you that. Oh, death, where is thy sting? The light no darkness can overcome. We are more than conquerors, and churches all over the world began their day with Christ is risen, he is risen indeed, alleluia. But if that's true, then why isn't everything all better? How come Jesus doesn't just roll out the grave, dust off his hands, and say, fixed it? Doesn't look fixed to me. Theologians are fond of using the term proleptic anticipation. It's all accomplished. You just can't see it. Nonetheless, Easter is about hope. Regardless of what you believe about the events of first century Jerusalem and that fateful Passover weekend, it's what it's about. I won't tell you. Don't lose hope. That's a little like telling somebody who's drowning, swim! Or telling an addict, just stop using. It's like telling someone who is dying, don't die. But we're all dying. It's like telling those who are hungry, just eat something. Marie Antoinette declared, let them eat cake. More recently, one of those whose name shall not be mentioned, but his initials are RFK Jr., he said, let them eat liver. Liver, because it's cheap. Everybody can afford liver, right? Voldemort told us on April Fool's Day that we can't afford to feed people because we're spending trillions on killing people. So I won't tell you everything is just fine because of Jesus' death and resurrection. It's a belief that many have, and it's a religious belief that is more than helpful for millions of people. If Easter gives you the hope to live in hope, then Easter has done its job. Death does not get the final word. But if that belief leads you to dismissing the well-being of others as meaningless, or becomes what Karl Marx called the opiate of the masses, it's less than palliative care. It might make death easier to take, but it sure doesn't conquer it. Numbed to the pain of dying is not the same thing as living in hope. If you can find hope, or if hope finds you, and what comes of death is new life, well, then Easter is worth celebrating, isn't it? Do something about it. Do something hopeful. Hunt for little symbols of new life in the form of colored Easter eggs and eat some jelly beans. Even though my favorite ones resemble rabbit droppings. I like the black ones. Celebrate spring. And a couple of weeks ago, the vernal equinox. The day when light and dark, day length and night are just about equal. Hike the woods and see if you can find where the wood frogs are croaking. At night, listen for spring peepers. Breathe in some fresh air, in through your nose and slowly out your mouth all the way. Enjoy the rain. Watch the sunrise. Sing. Feed the hungry. Give shelter to those who need it. Build anything. Plant anything. Love. Drink some wine. Eat some bread. Eat some deviled eggs. Thanks for having me.